This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
It feels like we're all being told to go on this diet, take that supplement. Ozempic will give you depression, but you know what'll cure that? Weed. Or you could try to balance your hormones. At Science Versus, we're like,
what the f*** is going on?
Forget the crap online and listen to Science Versus. Just the facts. Oh, and a bunch of stupid jokes.
What is a ghost's favorite fruit? Booberries.
That's Science VS. New season out on Spotify soon.
Jimmy, we probably have a great many young people watching our show tonight, and for their benefit, I'd like your opinion about fast driving on the highway. Do you think it's a good idea?
A good point. I used to fly around quite a bit. You know, I took a lot of unnecessary chances on the highways. And I started racing, and now I drive on the highways, and I'm extra cautious, because no one knows what they're doing half the time. You don't know what this guy is going to do with that one. On a track, there are a lot of men who spend a lot of time developing rules and ways of safety, and I find myself being very cautious on the highway. I don't have the urge to speed on the highway.
Too fast to live.
Too young to die.
He was a rebel without a cause.
A teen heartthrob.
A promising race car driver.
A sex symbol.
And an enduring icon of the teenage disillusionment of the 1950s.
In 4 short years, he had a more brilliant career than most would have in a lifetime.
And just as quickly, that light would be snuffed out.
With a violent and ironic death that shocked the world over. Hi, I'm Vanessa Richardson.
And I'm Carter Roy. Welcome to Famous Fates, a Parcast original exclusive to Spotify.
Each week, we'll release 5 fresh episodes centered around a common theme, such as Hollywood icons, influential women, or music legends.
In each episode, we'll take a close look at the remarkable life of a different person. With the help of voice actors, we'll dramatize their incredible lives, reimagining their greatest and weakest moments.
Then we'll examine their controversial deaths. Some deaths came too soon, some remained shrouded in mystery, and some changed the world forever.
Today we're covering actor and icon James Dean. In the 1950s, he starred in East of Eden, Giant, and Rebel Without a Cause. Surrounded by fast cars, cigarettes, and adoring girls, Dean became synonymous with teen rebellion. But did this devil-may-care image lead to his death? Or was it just a tragic accident?
You can find episodes of Famous Fates and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. To stream Famous Fates for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Famous Fates in the search bar. Famous Fates is a Spotify exclusive, so you can only find it on Spotify.
At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
Now, back to the life of James Dean.
Despite his huge cultural impact, Dean only ever starred as the lead in 3 movies, all of which were made in the last 2 years of his life.
In fact, he only watched one of those movies in full before he died, as the other 2 had not yet been completed.
And that film, East of Eden, earned him the first posthumous Academy Award acting nomination.
Giant, which was released a year after his death, also earned him a nomination.
And the last film, Rebel Without a Cause, is one of the most iconic teen movies of all time.
And he achieved all this before turning 25.
I was still living off ramen noodles at 24. And by that point, Dean had already left his mark on American history.
He packed a lot into his short time on Earth.
And that's exactly what we're going to explore today.
Born February 8th, 1931, James Byron Dean had a humble start as the son of Indiana farmers.
His family moved to Santa Monica, California, when he was still a child.
It was there, so close to Hollywood, that he found an early love for performing.
Mostly because Mildred Dean, his mother, was already his biggest fan.
He was her only child, and the apple of her eye, after all.
She had already enrolled him in tap dancing classes at age 3, and was teaching him to play violin.
Wynton, would you listen to that? Our boy is going to be playing Carnegie Hall next.
As long as he stays out of juvenile hall, it doesn't matter to me.
Well, I think he's brilliant.
I'll be more impressed when he learns more than those 3 notes.
Mom?
That was beautiful, Jimmy. Simply beautiful.
She knew he'd be a performer someday.
And of course, she was right.
But sadly, she never got to see that dream come to fruition.
In the summer of 1940, when her son was only 9 years old, Mildred Dean died of uterine cancer.
Unable, or perhaps unwilling, to raise his son alone, Dean's father sent him to live with his Quaker aunt and uncle back in Indiana. Life was tough back in the Midwest. His mother had just died, his father couldn't care for him, and the only friend he seemed to have was a local Methodist pastor that allegedly sexually abused him for several years.
Since the claims of abuse didn't come out until years after Dean's death, the pastor was never investigated or brought to trial.
And so the long, lonely years passed until Dean returned to California to attend Santa Monica College as a pre-law student.
Then, like many college students before and since, he switched majors and colleges midstream and enrolled at UCLA as a drama student.
It was a much better fit, but the choice estranged him from his father.
Now, Jimmy, I know we didn't bring you all the way back here so you can piss all our money away on this fantasy of yours.
It's not a fantasy. I know you think so, but...
What was so wrong with being a lawyer, Jimmy? What is so wrong with that?
It isn't me. I think I've been confused about what I want for all these years, but now I know.
You know? You know what? You don't know anything. You're an 18-year-old punk.
You don't know anything about me.
I'm your father.
You're my father, and you don't know anything about me. You never did. You left the raising to Mom and to Aunt Hortense. And now that you got me back, you don't know the first idea of what to do with me.
Out of my house. Get out of my house now!
I've already left.
We'll return to our story in just a moment. And now, back to the story.
What his father couldn't know was that Dean's change of majors would change his fate forever.
At UCLA, he was picked from a pool of 350 actors to play the role of Malcolm in Macbeth.
And it was only a short time later, in 1951, that James Dean would drop out of college for good to pursue acting full-time.
Like any young actor, he struggled to find jobs for a while.
He took jobs in Pepsi commercials, walk-on roles, and even worked as a parking lot attendant for CBS Studios.
At this point, he was relying more on his good looks for work rather than his acting talent.
And one of his most surprising odd jobs was a stunt tester for a CBS game show called Beat the Clock, where contestants could earn money by completing certain stunts within a set time limit.
It was a job he was apparently too good at. He was fired for completing the challenges too quickly.
That's right. He performed stunts too quickly for a show called Beat the Clock.
Let that one sink in.
In early 1952, he was finally admitted to the prestigious Actors Studio, a highly selective organization dedicated to coaching young actors like Marlon Brando, Julie Harris, and Arthur Kennedy.
It's still going strong today.
James Dean was one of the youngest to be offered membership to the Actors Studio.
And it was there that he had his first real exposure to method acting, which he would use masterfully in his short career.
And like Marlon Brando before him and many, many after him, Dean threw himself into characters head-on, pulling emotion and character conflict out of his own troubled backstory.
Method acting draws on the personal life experiences of each individual actor, allowing them to create more true-to-life characters and believable emotional responses.
Despite his young age, Dean had a pretty deep well to draw from.
From experiencing the death of his mother as a child, his cold relationship with his father, and his status as one of the disaffected youth of the 1950s, Dean acted with a convincing realness that shone through even his earliest acting assignments.
From then on, he really started to hit his stride.
He started getting television roles.
With lines and everything.
And calls from bigger and bigger Hollywood names.
Until he finally got a call from director Elia Kazan about his new movie, East of Eden.
Kazan was at the height of his career with films like A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, A Streetcar Named Desire, and On the Waterfront under his belt.
And he wanted fresh faces to portray Cal and Aaron Trask, the two sons at the center of his new film.
James Dean beat out established actors, including Marlon Brando, Montgomery Clift, and Paul Newman for the role of Cal.
From our perspective, it's pretty clear why he got the part. Cal Trask is a brooding, troubled, and intelligent young man who constantly seeks the approval of his father and yearns for the affection of his dead mother.
Or at least the mother he thinks is dead.
East of Eden spoilers much?
Carter, it's been over 60 years. The statute of limitations on that one has worn off.
Well, regardless, Dean was a shoo-in for the role, and Kazan took his home life into account when casting the character.
He even went with Dean to visit his father in Los Angeles and witnessed firsthand how fraught and estranged their relationship was.
It perfectly mirrored the complex relationship between Cal and his father.
Kazan was quoted as saying it was the most apt casting he'd ever done in his life. In other words, Dean's background and personality made him a perfect fit for the part.
And boy, did it pay off. Dean quickly followed up East of Eden with another leading role in Rebel Without a Cause,
where he played yet another brooding, troubled teenager looking for his father's approval.
It was an instant classic, the perfect encapsulation of teenage angst and rebellion of the time. It was a hit with younger audiences who saw themselves in Dean's cool yet restless Jim Stark.
Jim is frustrated with his parents, authorities, and society at large, but still manages to come off as fundamentally good-hearted.
And did we mention cool? He gets in fights, effortlessly woos ladies, and races stolen cars.
Said car race is a pretty climactic scene in Rebel Without a Cause. In it, Jim Stark is challenged to a chicky run by a romantic rival in order to defend his honor.
The two must race their cars together toward the edge of a cliff at high speed and jump out at the last second. Whoever jumps out first loses.
Jim makes it out, but the rival gets stuck on the car door and plummets to his death.
It was probably this scene that really cemented Dean's image as a daredevil driver.
We'll get back to that a bit later, but for now, after Rebel Without a Cause's success, Dean noticed he was starting to get typecast.
That's probably why his character in his next movie, Giant, is such a huge contrast to Jim Stark. The audience follows from his young adulthood as a ranch hand to a wealthy oil baron as an older man, which stretched his acting muscles quite a bit.
Dean had started to gain some notoriety after his success in East of Eden and Rebel Without a Cause, and grew a young fan base eager to know all about his life.
Especially when it came to who he was dating.
Warner Brothers Public Relations Department did what they did best and started rumors about him seeing all sorts of popular starlets.
Notably, Italian actress Pier Angeli.
However, many biographers claim that Dean may have been gay or bisexual, and his relationships with actresses were largely publicity stunts.
It doesn't help that he was grouped together in studio press releases with Rock Hudson and Tab Hunter, who both came out as gay later in life, as eligible bachelors who didn't have time to settle down with women.
Of course, without Dean alive to confirm it, we'll never know his sexuality for certain.
But that didn't stop him from becoming one of the most popular gay male icons of all time.
He had that kind of universal appeal,
which made his death at such a young age all the more shocking.
And as we're entering the last lap of the race, we've got number 21 pulling in front, with 20 right behind. Oh, 23 is pulling ahead. Number 23 is pulling ahead. And at the finish line, we have first place going to number 23, James Dean in his Porsche Speedster. Where is James Dean?
James Dean wasn't just a daredevil as a character in his movies, he was one in real life as well.
In 1954, shortly after he was cast in East of Eden, Dean began to enter the world of car racing.
He began his racing career with a 1955 Porsche Super Speedster, which he entered into the Palm Springs Road Race.
He got first place in his very first race, finishing second overall in the event.
After that, racing was his passion whenever he was off the set.
He made friends with people like Bill Hickman, a stunt driver with Warner Brothers, who only helped fuel his racing passion.
It got to be such a distraction that during the filming of Giant, the studio banned him from all racing activities.
Which, predictably, only made him want to race even more.
As Giant was wrapping, Dean traded in the Speedster for a new, more powerful Porsche 550 Spider.
He named the car Little Bastard after the affectionate nickname Bill Hickman had given him.
Dean called Hickman Big Bastard in return, because fair is fair.
Dean had big plans for racing Little Bastard as soon as Giant was done filming, and was finally able to drive it to a race in Salinas, California on September 30th, 1955.
Although he originally planned to tow Little Bastard from Hollywood to Salinas, Dean's mechanic, Rolf Wooderich, suggested he drive it there instead instead to break it in for the race.
Dean agreed, and the two of them set off with Bill Hickman following behind in a second car.
Midway there, Dean was stopped by a highway patrolman for driving 10 miles per hour over the speed limit of 55. He received a speeding citation, but continued down Route 466 to his destination.
His final destination, as it turned out.
We'll return to our story in just a moment.
And now, back to the story.
Woohoo!
Listen to that engine purr, Jimmy.
It's roaring, Roll. Little bastard is a real beast.
This is the life, huh? 110 horsepower, four cylinders firing, the breeze at our backs.
You know it is.
We've got a clear stretch of highway. You want to kick it up a notch, break in the gears for the first big race.
I'm way ahead of you. Now that's more like it. Come on, baby.
Okay, time to dial back. That guy's getting a little close.
Okay. Don't want to tire the little bastard out, huh?
Hey, Jimmy, watch out for that intersection.
Oh, that guy's got to stop. He'll see us.
At 5:15 p.m. on September 30th, 1955, Cal Poly student Donald Turnipseed made a left turn off Route 466, headed east.
James Dean's little bastard was headed west on 466 at high speed.
Although Dean tried to maneuver around Turnipseed's Ford, there wasn't enough time or space for either of them to avoid the collision.
The cars met nearly head-on, sending the Ford careening back nearly 40 feet and the little bastard cartwheeling into a ditch on the shoulder of the highway.
Rolf Wooderich was thrown from the car and sustained severe hip and femur injuries, as well as a broken leg.
Donald Turnipseed's car was much sturdier than the speed-built little bastard, and he only received a few bruises and bloody nose from the car crash.
James Dean wasn't so lucky. He got the brunt of the crash and had broken his neck along with other injuries that pinned him inside the car.
Although there were passersby who stopped to help, there wasn't much they could do to extricate Dean from the car without injuring him further.
By the time authorities arrived, it was too late. James Dean was pronounced dead on arrival at the Paso Robles War Memorial Hospital at 6:20 p.m. that evening.
The official investigation into the crash determined that neither party was at fault for the crash.
The little bastard was built low to the ground, so Turnipseed didn't notice it coming until it was too late.
At the end of the day, Turnipseed had to hitchhike home in the dark, broken nose and all, with the knowledge that he had been involved in the death of one of America's sweethearts.
James Dean was the only one not to have survived the crash.
He was just 24 years old.
In all the tragedies surrounding the crash, historians have noted a lot of strange ironies and coincidences around James Dean's death.
One of those ironies was that just 2 weeks before the crash, Dean starred in a PSA for Warner Brothers about the dangers of speeding on the highway.
People say racing is dangerous, but I'll take my chances on the track any day than on a highway.
Well, Gig, I think I'd better take off.
Oh, wait a minute, Jimmy. One more question. Do you have any special advice for the young people who drive?
Take it easy driving. The life you might save might be mine.
By the way, that last line was an ad-lib by Dean.
The scripted line was, "The life you save might just be your own."
But instead, it became an eerily prescient echo of his impending death.
Another odd coincidence came a week later when Dean decided to show off his new Porsche Spyder to actor Alec Guinness.
Guinness told him that the sleekly designed race car looked sinister.
And warned Dean, if you get in that car, you will be found dead in it by this time next week.
You don't need me to tell you that Dean died in that car exactly a week later.
Wait, are we saying that Sir Alec Guinness was a psychic?
I wouldn't put anything past Obi-Wan.
Agreed. Incidentally, the weirdness didn't stop after Dean's death either.
In fact, things got even weirder.
Because even after being totaled, the little bastard wasn't done causing havoc yet.
The Porsche was sold at a salvage yard to a George Barris, who planned to use it as scrap.
As the wrecked car was being transported, it slipped off its trailer and broke the leg of a mechanic who had been working on it.
Later, Barris sold the parts of the little bastard to a Dr. William F. Esrich, a fellow racer who wanted to use the little bastard's engine to power his own race car.
Esrich also loaned a few parts of the little bastard to another racer, Dr. Troy McHenry.
The two modified cars entered a race in 1956, during which Esrich's car rolled over, injuring him.
And McHenry completely lost control of his car, careening into a tree and dying on impact.
George Barris, who still owned the little bastard's chassis, decided to fix it up in order to show it at highway safety exhibits all over the country.
But even without its inner workings, the car brought trouble.
As it was awaiting its display in Fresno, California, the garage in which the car was being housed mysteriously caught fire.
The fire burned two tires and scorched some paint, but the little bastard was otherwise unharmed.
Other alleged victims of the curse of the little bastard include a car using its tires that simultaneously burst, running its driver off the road.
Two would-be thieves injuring themselves while trying to gut the car.
The body of the car falling off a display at an exhibition and breaking an onlooker's hip.
And taking a third life when it rolled off yet another transport.
While not all of these stories can be corroborated, the legend of the cursed car had firmly cemented itself in the minds of the American populace.
So where is the little bastard now, continuing on its chaotic agenda?
Truth be told, we have no idea. In 1960, while Barris was transporting the car in a sealed truck, the little bastard somehow vanished into thin air.
Some people believe that Barris created the thin air story for attention.
While others believe he misplaced the car on purpose to avoid its curse coming after him next.
Whatever the truth is, the little bastard hasn't been seen since then.
And just like that, the strange footnote to James Dean's life was over.
As a racer, actor, and cultural icon, James Dean accomplished about as much in his 24 years of life as anyone ever could.
And who knows what he could have done in 60 more.
As it was, he managed to inspire a sense of camaraderie and rebellion in an entire generation with his on- and off-screen persona.
He was one of the greats of method acting.
And was on the cusp of a promising racing career.
Even so, his dramatic death cemented his icon status, permanently frozen as the picture of a rebellious young adult.
Stoking the fire for generations of rebellious young adults to come. Thanks for listening. You can find more episodes of Famous Fates and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Famous Fates is a Spotify exclusive.
Well, not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Famous Fates for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker.
To stream Famous Fates on Spotify, just open the app and type Famous Fates in the search bar. Remember, it's a Spotify exclusive, so you can only find the show right here.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
We'll see you next time.